So I'm one of those people who has always sort of prided themselves on being a mature, adaptable individual. You know, I was one of the folks who jumped on the internet as soon as I got an Apple computer, you know. I even accepted my first fax machine, which tells you how old I am right off the bat. But I have to confess as I begin this talk with you this morning that I am still suffering from a little bit of Pluto denial. In my mind, Pluto will always remain a planet. None of this, you know, dwarf planet type mysterious object. Insert swear word here. It's a planet. It marks the boundaries of our solar system, and as far as I'm concerned, that should be the end of the story. When I was in third grade, maybe some of you also had this experience, I made a model of the solar system for my science project, and I shouldn't brag, but it really was a thing of beauty. And it had Pluto in it at the end. So I did maybe procrastinate a little bit, and maybe the paint was a little bit wet when I turned it in, but hey, it taught me that the universe was a tidy, measurable place, and it comforted me to make that model. Now, as it turns out, I'm not alone in my Pluto denial. This week's astonishing images from the New Horizons space probe have re-triggered widespread unhappiness caused by Pluto's demotion from full planetary status. Adam Frank is a theoretical and computational astrophysicist at the University of Rochester, and he also happens to be a blogger for National Public Radio. Maybe some of you follow him. And he says that he gets this question all the time, why did you whack Pluto? As though he and his colleagues had just collectively strangled the universe's most cute puppy. Now, he says his first instinct is to say, get over it, people. Pitiful little Pluto is just a rock. He's learned over time that what he calls his Jersey-tuned sensibilities on this topic just aren't going to help anyone. So why does it matter that Pluto isn't a planet anymore? Well, the Jersey boy, Adam Frank, has a theory, and this theory makes a lot of sense to me. See, Pluto, he explains in words that even I can understand, Pluto was demoted when scientists began to understand that solar systems are in reality extremely messy spaces. What I was taught as a child is simply not true anymore. Moreover, the truth that is now emerging is chaotic. It's impossible to simplify. And some of us, including me, don't like that. I find myself resisting very often the truth of a universe that doesn't play by the rules I learned in third grade. It scares me. It scares me that planets can disappear at a keystroke. It scares me that we human beings have changed our climate forever. It scares me and saddens me that I may not live to see a world free of racialized and economic oppression, the world I dreamed of and so many dreamed of 50, 100, 200 years ago. You don't need me to tell you that our universe is constantly changing and that we are constantly changing. And the problem is that now that we know that Pluto is just one of many malformed little rocks, you know, sort of winging back and forth in crazy orbits, we can't go back to not knowing it. We can try. All you need to do is turn on your computer or open a newspaper to see multiple stories about people like you and me who are trying very hard to live as though nothing ever changes. I may be going out on a limb here, but to be honest with you, it also saddens me to think that often the business of church is to reassure us that nothing changes. But change is a fact of life. It may be the fact of life. I am not a committed Buddhist, but I know that Buddhism teaches this. Everything in life is impermanent. The manicure I got last week, the handsome young man I married 25 years ago, the strength and vitality of my body. My husband, Mike, lives with multiple sclerosis. Among many other things, he has been unable to stand or walk since the end of the Clinton administration. Some of you may be familiar with this disease. If so, you know that it is completely unpredictable. Mike and I and our children, we never know what is going to be lost next or when it's going to be lost, whether it's some of his eyesight, his manual dexterity, his ability to tolerate heat. We don't know what new assault on his dignity might be coming next. We live with the reality of impermanence while struggling constantly to keep love and hope alive. And I will tell you that many times over the years, what we have struggled to do is to resist and not acknowledge the changes that were happening. Because how do you accept the unacceptable? How do you accept that everything you thought you knew is a lie? Or even if we knew in the back of our minds that these things would happen or that these things would change, we could not possibly know how it would feel to actually live through and experience that change. Buddhist teacher Sylvia Boorstein says, "You don't get what you deserve. You get what you get." I hate that. A new writer I discovered, M.J. Ryan, tells of a spiritual teacher who was once asked her secret to happiness. She said, "A wholehearted, unrestricted cooperation with the unavoidable." Wow. I'm thinking this might be helpful to social conservatives as they ponder the unavoidableness of marriage equality or Obamacare. I might tell them everything is impermanent. So acceptance does not mean agreement or complicity. To cooperate with the unacceptable, I have learned, is not to just, you know, passively endure whatever fate hands out. As you were telling us the story of Hero this morning, this is exactly the story you were telling. But before we can resist, we have to accept what is in front of us. We have to accept the new reality. What might have once been a vibrant neighborhood may now no longer be. What might have once been a vital, strong body may now no longer be. And the new normal can happen dozens of times a day. I believe with all my heart that resistance still has its place and that it is terribly important. Resist when it is appropriate, after accepting the truth. I tell myself, and I will share with you, don't resist the truth itself. Mike and I resist the notion, we resist the accepted truth that one cannot live a full life inside a very, very disabled body. Debbie asked me this morning if I was going to talk about accepting change or making change. And I said, well, really what I'm focusing on is accepting change. But the truth is that in our resistance, in the moments that come after that acceptance, that's where we're called to make change. So the real courage isn't always simply in accepting the truth. The real courage comes afterwards in living that truth. In a couple of days, it's going to be 90 years since a young school teacher and part-time football coach in Tennessee was found guilty of teaching evolution in the public schools and was forced to pay a fine of $100. The law he broke, the anti-evolution law, which is known as the Butler Act, stayed on the books in Tennessee until 1967. The Institute for Creation Research continues to resist the truth inherent in the theory of evolution. And as I learned this week when I explored their website, their scientists insist that today, in this moment, there are more opponents of the theory of evolution than there have ever been. You know, we've all heard about the debates in school systems and different localities. We've heard about the Texas Board of Education approving, endorsing creation-based textbooks in the state's classrooms. Now, by the way, I can't resist telling you this. The Institute for Creation Research, also has something to say about Pluto. They don't like it because they figure it's another scientific conspiracy to eliminate God. This is a quote. There's little doubt they, meaning New Horizons and NASA scientists, they fully intend for this story to leave no room for a supernatural creator. All right, that wasn't really my problem with the news about Pluto, but I'd like to go with this for a minute. If I am afraid that science or the public schools or anything else are going to take away my God and my life-sustaining, hope-sustaining faith, I can resist the truth such as it is, or I can resist after accepting the new truth. Maybe I can expand my notion of the sacred. Because I don't know if you've seen them, but those images of Pluto are pretty amazing, aren't they? Did you see, if you saw them, that there's a geological formation that looks just like a heart on the surface? That was for me. Okay, not really. Maybe, just maybe, that sacred spirit center I was so afraid of losing is actually more vast and astounding than I ever thought possible. This isn't an argument for theism. I don't know you well enough to go there yet. But it is an argument for cultivating acceptance of the truth, knowing that the truth is impermanent too. And that's a decision each of us can make right now, because that's how we're made. Now, I don't know you. I've met a few folks from this congregation to my delight, and I hope that I will meet and get to know many more of you. You know, we are church neighbors. Restoration's just right up the street. But even though I don't know you, I can tell you right now certain things about you and your lives. As we have already heard this morning, each of you has unique gifts and experiences to share. Each and every one of us in this sanctuary this morning has survived many unexpected changes in our lives. You have coped with and adjusted to more kinds of difficulties than I could imagine. You've coped with grief. You've coped with loss. You've coped with no water in the bowls, for crying out loud. Not that that was a big stretch, but, you know. There are people in some churches who might complain about that. Not here. You have lived with and coped with realities of oppression, be it economic, be it racial, be it social, be it oppression caused by ignorance, misunderstanding, differences in religion or gender orientation. You have survived the end of relationships and illness. Like me, you have had to witness the suffering of others, including the people you love most in the world. All of us have either lost a job, an opportunity, a love, or a cherished dream, or all of the above. And you have survived and adapted and grown. I know this because you're here. Now, I can't say whether human beings are born with original sin. We can get into that during coffee hour if you like, but I do know that human beings are born with original resilience. I do know that. We survive, we learn, we cope, we adapt, we get through it. And as Kent said when he opened this beautiful service this morning, here in our faith communities, we get help from one another, and we offer ourselves to one another to cope with these changes that are so hard to deal with. And okay, so what if some of our adaptations are, well, you know, a little bit maladaptive? It's all right. We're not here to judge ourselves harshly. We're here to learn. And we can all work on how we choose to adapt. We're human. That's part of who we are. And the rewards are really worth it. The writer I mentioned a moment ago, M.J. Ryan, describes how psychologists used to believe that resilience was rare. Here's another truth, like Pluto. Now, these scientists are finding that not only is resilience extremely common, it may even be universal. When we accept the changes in our lives, when we choose whether or not to resist and make change that is within our power to make, our relationships improve, including our relationship with ourselves. We come to appreciate life more. I know you know what I mean, how precious life is when it is challenged. We get stronger. We evolve in our spirituality. It's worth it, isn't it? Amen. Ashe and blessed be.